Welcome back, everyone, to Master of the Universe podcast, horror podcast, because it was dubbed the already by numerous people. Joey here with Gabe and Christopher J, motherfucker, to the max. And this week, we're bringing you 1988's Hellraiser 2, Hellbound, or Hellbound Hellraiser 2. Now, we already did Hellraiser 1, but we did it without Gabe, so we'll talk about 1 first before we get to 2 and some of the Cenobite shit. But Gabe, Mr. Horror Movie Horror News, my man, any horror movie news going out there, any projects, any good stories, what's going on?
Oh, man, there's a lot of good stuff going on. Just for a couple of tidbits, not even that long ago, and I was trying to talk to y'all about it earlier, was Friday the 13th, Jason Goes to Hell. His hockey mask was up for grabs. And that mask was up for grab for anybody that likes memorabilia and all that. Someone actually snagged it. But this isn't just like, oh, okay, well, they snagged it. How much did they get it for? Like $100, $1,000, $2,000? No. $225,000 for that freaking mask. And I thought that was, like, so amazing. I thought that was crazy amount for, you know, that's just a staggering amount. And that kind of blew me out of the water because I wanted that mask.
I agree with you because, I mean, like, it's not one of the more iconic Friday the 13th films, that one, number one and number two. Mm-hmm. My measuring stick is always Sergeant Pepper's.
I thought you were going to say your penis, but.
Yeah, that too. But the Sgt. Pepper Beatles album, the bass drum cover that's featured in the front of the album, that item literally in 2010 or 2009 sold on online for $900,000.
Yeah, see, for something like that, like, it's a Beatles thing, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I mean, as iconic as Jason is, I wouldn't think it would be more than a few thousand. So for it to get that much, it was like, wow. And then it was the shitty Jason.
I thought it would be like 80,000 max.
Yeah, that's high. I thought, like, maybe, I mean, because it's a movie memorabilia kind of deal. Maybe like maybe 10,000. I could see it ranging from 10 to 20,000, but 225, that is fucking nuts. I mean, they must, I don't know what the fuck they did.
You know what that was? I think that was the whole COVID thing. I think people were stuck inside their house. They weren't really buying much. They were hoarding their money, saving it. Yeah. And this guy, he's making good money, but he ain't going out and spending it, you know, at the clubs or, you know, buying them drinks or whatever for the ladies. No, he didn't do any of that. He hoarded his money. He saw this going up to her auction, and he's like, sure, I'll throw that in my basket of goodies too. Why not? Click add to cart. And that's exactly what he did.
He better have, like, some ridiculous collection, you know. That better not be the most iconic thing he has, paying $225,000. He better have some serious shit, you know, in his little box of gimmicks, because that's, like, insane, dude.
Box of gimmicks, Conrad.
I don't know about you guys, though, but if you go ahead and you kind of flick around on TikTok, like the way I do, I go ahead and I'm scrolling through these things, not even just TikTok, but, like, you know, Twitter and Instagram and all that, and some of these people, like, these horror fanatics, they are, like, they love horror, and love probably just isn't enough a word for this, because these people like to show off, like, their collection. I kid you not. These people have masks. They got the costumes. I've seen Elvira pinball machines, like, restored and all, like, in all its glory, like, sitting against their wall amongst, like, horror sign posters and all that. I mean, I got, like, a nice little collection myself, but yeah. I mean, these people go above and beyond. It's amazing that I mean, there's people that like it, love it, and then there's the extremists that are like, you know, I have to go one step further. I need the original screen-written play that's signed by the whole cast from, you know, 1995, whatever, you know, the faculty or something. They'll go the distance and pick, you know, they get like the whole cast and everything. It's amazing.
Well, those are people too that make like a lot of money. They can do like buy shit like that, you know, because like you and me, like we're kind of like one of those dudes that, you know, we have like a little collection, nice collection, but it's like, you know, we collect, you know, DVDs and bullshit. Or I don't know if you do because I know you have like your own drive now. But I used to collect like DVDs and, you know, some figures. But if I had them, I got posters, you know, and that's the kind of the extent. If I had, you know, say an extra $10,000 on to buy shit. Oh yeah, I think my collection would be pretty crazy. But like what you're saying, even if I did have the money, I was like, I don't know why I would pay money for the scripts and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like unless it was like something really crazy, like, you know what I mean, like the original Nightmare, you know, on Elm Street or like something like that. But yeah, some of these people out there, like you're saying, they're like, they're in it like for like all the different kind of gimmicks, dude. They're just like, they have like so many fucking favorites that they're all their favorite, like, you know. I do it for Phantasm.
The whole cast, right? Get everybody on there. Yeah. Man, as far as other things going on, besides that amazing, like, crazy amount of money on that mask, some pretty interesting, and I thought it was actually good news for all those zombie fiends out there, all those people that love the whole zombie apocalypse type of thing. So Night of the Living Dead, they are making a part two, which should add... I'm assuming it's coming out by the end of this year. They're already working on it, and they got clips out on that you can pick up on the internet. But apparently, they got Night of the Living Dead Part 1, the old 1968, and Part 2 is supposed to be a follow-up from that. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the questions I had already received, you know, after sending this information to some other people, they said, oh, well, they already have it. It's called Return of the Living Dead, you know, and there's also Day of the Dead. No. The way that whole franchise goes is that it started off with Night of the Living Dead, and then it split off into two different, you know, entities there. There's the George Romero version, which you have Night of the Living Dead, mm-hmm. the 1968, and then there's the Dawn of the Dead, and then you got Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. Well, then it splits off into the second half, which is you got Night of the Living Dead. We'll start off there, and then it splits off, and then it goes into Return of the Living Dead. Then 2, 3, 4, 5, and it just kind of goes on from there. So there's like two, and they both make references to the original Night of the Living Dead 1968 movie. What's interesting is that they're saying that this movie that's going to be coming out is a follow-up to that. So now it's directly a Night of the Living Dead Part 2. But here's the kicker, though. Here's the extra little cherry on top of it. They got the Day of the Dead cast. They will be premiering into this Night of the Living Dead Part 2 movie. Now, some people are saying, like, well, is this going to be, like, further into the future, like, after... You know, Day of the Dead, you know, is this going to be a younger crowd, or, you know, is this going to be like right after that? How are they going to do that? Well, there's nothing on it yet. I was looking through it, and there's not really much saying like what's the time period on it. But just understand that there is a part two to the original 1968 and Day of the Dead, which I think came out in like late 1980s. And the cast for that one will appear in into part two. So I thought that was amazing. I thought that was cool. I was like, no shit, you know, we're getting a direct sequel, not just the split off.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a lot of people, I wasn't gonna say that, but I was like, I know you're wise to the business. So it's like, you don't need to have me say like, oh, well, you know, Return of the Living Dead is supposed to be the sequel. Cause it's, you know, like you said, it was split where John Russo got the Living Dead, and then Romero's got, you know, the Dead or whatever. So they had like the rights to it, but not a direct sequel like you're saying to the original. That's a super classic, and I like both, and so I like all the Romero ones after that. They're pretty cool. And then like I like Return of the Living Dead. I haven't seen, I think there's like a 2 and 3 for Return of the Living Dead, but I haven't seen those. But maybe one day.
Yeah, that Return of the Living Dead goes all the way up into, I think it's like a part 7. Jesus Christ. I can't say that word, Necropolis. And pretty much it, if you've seen some of the Return of the Living Dead, you'll know there's like a sense of comedy in some of them. And as it gets more into the more newer, into the more modern age, you'll see those movies actually start becoming more of a, you know, really more of a comedy. Oh, that's right. It's called Return of the Living Dead Necropolis, Rave of the Dead. And that was like the last newest Return of the Living Dead. I think that came out in like, I don't know, I think it was like 2007 or 2006 or something. Either way, it was a newer one, and it wasn't bad. I mean, it was okay. It was all right. If you like the previous ones, this is more of a modern take, more up to date, and it's yeah, pretty funny.
All right, so when we get back, we're going to go ahead and start talking about Hellraiser Hellbound after this break. So Hellraiser Hellbound, man. So Chris, this is the first time you've seen this one, right? We only did part one. I don't think we ever got to doing part two. Did you ever like peek at part two before we get too in depth on the film prior to
that? I did peek at part two after we did part one. I watched the first 10 to 15 minutes of it.
So you saw the recap? Saw the recap?
This is the recap. No, I actually just turned it on because at the time, both of them were on Hulu when we did them. And I watched part two, but only like the first 10, maybe 12 minutes of it. And I already liked it better than the first one because it was starting on an established premise, unlike the first one, which had a very weakly made foundation.
For me, I had rented it way back when, and the cover that I saw was the one where it's like Pinhead and then the female Cenobite. And they were wearing like doctor. Well, I don't know if they were wearing doctor's outfits, but I know there was like a picture on the back. It was like a deleted scene. Now that I think about it, but I just was like, wow, this looks even crazier than the first one. And I remember watching it and being like really kind of horrified because this one's a little crazier than the first one. But I can't really say. But Gabe, why don't you walk us through Hellraiser Hellbound and we'll talk about it?
Cool. Well, Hellraiser. Part two, Hellbound. This movie is really good. It's way better. Well, like Chris was saying, it is way better than the first one. The idea behind this is that it all revolves apparently around this puzzle box. This puzzle box happens to, in the right coordination, the way you go ahead and you move that box around, if you can hit it and move it just right, it can open a door to hell. Now, in the original one, what happens in the beginning of part two is that it ends up starting off with this girl. She ends up in bed. Her name is Kirsty. Now, Kirsty wakes up and she's already panicking. She's already in a frantic. Now, you're probably wondering, like, well, how did she get there and why aren't you talking about part one? Well, this is what's going to end up happening. She wakes up, she's in a frantic. Who's right there in front of her is this police officer, like a detective kind of. And he's already like, look, he's all, you need to tell me what happened, what is going on, you know, and, you know, where did all the dead bodies and everything like that come up from? You know, and she's all like, oh no, what happened to my dad? You know, what happened to this person or what happened to that? And they're all over the place. She's all scatterbrained. She's all over the place. She wakes up. She doesn't know where she's at. Well, you find out that she's in a hospital. It's kind of like a hospital and like a mental ward. It's kind of
psychiatric hospital. Psychiatric.
Yeah, there you go. And,
you know, can I just say, do you notice in that part of the film, that early minutes of the film, whenever Kirstie talks, she sounds like, Lorraine Baines, a.k.a. Marty McFly's mom in part one, whenever they're alone in an intimate setting.
I honestly did not know that. I didn't catch that.
Honestly. Yeah, I'm going to listen to it now. You know what I was laughing at when I was watching the movie, that cop. The cop that's like they're talking to her, he looks exactly like Michael Shannon. I don't know if y'all are familiar.
Like Bronson.
Yeah, whatever his name is, but he looks like the actor Michael Shannon. Like, and he's from Man of Steel. He's the Zod character, and he comes out in like a mobster movie, The Iceman. But he looks like yeah. that guy, like that. The cop's fatter, of course, but he looks exactly. As soon as I saw him, I was like, it looks like that one actor, and I couldn't think of his name. No, I looked at him.
Thank you for saying that, because I didn't look that deep into it, but I knew I'd seen the guy before. So if he's in Iceman Kuklinski, that's where I've seen him.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the same actor, but he just looked like him. He looked like the actor. That's what I was saying. Like, yeah, I was like, he looks exactly like Michael Shannon, and yeah, Iceman is Michael Shannon. So that's I was like, he looks exactly like that. Tidbit.
Yeah. I was like, I have nothing to say.
Yeah, I didn't think anyone would kind of notice it unless you're a Michael Shannon fan. All the Michael Shannon fans of the world, but there, go ahead, proceed.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, so as he starts asking her, like, you know, we need you to explain what's going on, she starts doing a recap of basically of what happened in part one. Pretty much what happened is that in part one, her uncle, Uncle Frank, ends up, he goes off and he explores the world. He's the rebel badass. He's, what is it from Full House? What's his name? Uncle Joey? Mm-hmm. You know, like the guy that slicks his hair back and he has the leather jacket. No,
that's Uncle Jesse.
Oh, yeah, Jesse. Yeah, Jesse.
I don't remember.
You know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. So, anyways, Uncle Frank is the badass in the family. He's the rebel. He's the one who does all this stuff. Anyways, he comes across the puzzle box. He starts playing around with it, and he ends up at his brother's house. Well, funny enough, mm-hmm. the brother is not there. The brother is actually off. You know, he's going through his own issues, and he's going through his own problems and everything. But anyways, the brother ends up at his house, and in the attic, he starts playing with the puzzle box. Well, he ends up answering it correctly, where all of a sudden the Cenobites end up coming in. Now, the Cenobites, you'll probably wonder, they're nothing more than like these S&M looking demons. And pretty much that's what Clive Barker based these characters off. So pretty much they're all leathered, tight latex looking guys that have like they're all twisted looking.
It's like that off, dodgeball when Peter LaFleur's team got the wrong outfits.
Oh man, they're horrible looking. They're terrible. And so in this case, so these guys come out, and their whole purpose is to bring souls to their god, which happens to be that box. It happens to be that box. They go ahead and drag them straight into hell. So anyways, they went ahead and they dragged Uncle Frank down into hell, and she starts explaining, saying, look, then my parents, my stepmom, Julia, and my dad and me all ended up going back to the house. What happened? Something happened that some blood or something like that spilled, and all of a sudden here comes Uncle Frank back from the dead, you know, forming his body back from blood. So Julia decides to help him because they used to be secret lovers back then, a little cheating going on there. So they end up Julia, the stepmom, ends up helping the brother by bringing him people. So he goes ahead and starts killing them, sucking up their blood, and
she's sucking them off, and then organs. He's sucking their blood.
He's sucking their blood. He's sucking them off. He's doing all kinds of stuff. And he's rebuilding his organs. He's rebuilding everything again. So all of a sudden, he starts becoming whole. Well, the last person they ended up killing was the dad.
Larry.
So Christy explains that. She says, that's his name, Larry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he ends up, she ends up explaining, he got a hold of my dad. I got in a scuffle with him. I saw the box. I took the box, and I realized that he wanted that more than anything. I started playing around with it, and then here comes these demons again. So I had to explain to the demons, hey, someone escaped your hell, and they're all, and they didn't believe me. They were saying, no, 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 no one escapes us. No, no, seriously, they escaped you. And tell you what, I'll bring them back to you if you go ahead and let me go. We'll give you like so many hours, but we want proof. You better go and do it quick, or we're gonna come and take you to hell. Oh yeah, yeah, no problem. So she ends up going back. She ends up in a scuffle with the. She ends up in a scuffle again. You know, there's Uncle Frank. There's Julia, but she doesn't know that it was Uncle Frank because Uncle Frank stole her dad's skin. Yeah, it starts getting gross from here. So the brother took the dad's skin. He killed his own brother. He's wearing the skin. They realize now it's like two against one. They're in a scuffle with each other. They're like all fighting. Guess who shows up? The Cenobites. So the Cenobites, the demons, end up coming in. They end up taking them out. They kill Julia. They take her ass too. So now all of a sudden she's like, okay, well, you know what? Since we're already here, we might as well go ahead and take Kirstie. You know, the girl that made the deal with them. And she's like, oh shit. Well, she realized she was kind of fumbling with that puzzle box. She did something in just the right way where she ended up zapping, because it was like a little electricity cheap lightning bolt that comes from it, zapping one of the demons going straight back to hell. Well, guess what? It didn't just work once, it worked on all of them. So all of a sudden, she's like, oh, it's over. By the end of it, she's fighting with the demon. Her boyfriend comes in, trying to help her out. They get in a scuffle again. They make it out. Everything's fine. All of a sudden, they end up seeing a demon by the end of the movie that took away the box and more than possibly ends up leading it off to someone else. Anyway, so that's her whole story. She explains that to the cop. The cop doesn't believe it. He's like, this is bullshit. This is stupid. You know, you belong here. You know, whatever. So he takes off. Who comes in? Dr. Chouinard. Now, this is going to be like one of the main villains for this story, but he seems like, in general, like he wants to kind of help her out, but not kind of, sort of. You get this weird vibe off him that he doesn't. Anyways, yeah. Who's also right next to him? He has his fellow, you know, registered nurse. I don't know. I guess that's like a minor doctor also. Or maybe a level down. He's taking orders from the doctor.
He might be an RN or he might be a. Because
he mentioned that he said, I'm a doctor. You know,
he's a med school grad doing his residency.
Yeah, there you go. And I just kind of took it as a, you know, oh okay, well, I guess he's a doctor because that's what he said. But, anyways, as far as this point, so it's them two. But the one she starts befriending is. The guy, what was his name again?
I think it's Kyle. I think that's his name. I didn't catch it because, you could tell he's just all like they. I don't know why. Well, yeah, I mean I know why they said in the beginning of the film. We sent him home because she has like that other boyfriend, and they kind of like, well, let's just get this guy instead to like kind of, you know, move along with him. Can I just say, you know, since Frank's really not going to be in the film any longer, I think. Well, I think he shows up towards like the middle of it, but I was laughing when I saw this, like the little flashbacks in the beginning, because I was like, I get a Razor Ramon vibe when I see Uncle Frank. So I was just like, you know, he's got the 5 o'clock shadow and all that shit. But I was just like, he looks like Razor Ramon. So, you know, Frank's Razor Ramon now. So that's all I have.
That's what I was saying. I was like, he just has that badass look. You know, like, I don't know. He, you're right. He has the 5 o'clock shadow. He has the deep, rugged voice. He's got the chiseled chin. I can't
believe and he's banging, you know, he's like goes – he's over here just banging his brother's, you know, wife or soon-to-be wife. Or just he just shows up and, like, wherever he goes, dude, it's like just like that's it, dude. Hey, yo. Dude,
Frank's a fucking scumbag. Frank's not Razor Ramon. Frank isn't even Rick Bogner.
Don't know who that is, but okay.
The fake Razor?
Okay.
He even has like that little finishing touch to let you know he's a badass, is because he's got that little switchblade too.
When he cuts off the bra, right? Yeah, that's right.
I was like, so you know he's a badass when he's got a switchblade, his hair's all slicked back, 5 o'clock shadow. Yeah, I kid you not. anyways, at this point, Kyle, the registered nurse or the minor doctor, ends up befriending Kirstie, and they're talking, and he's all like, "Well, maybe you just hit your head, or maybe you're not feeling well." And she's like, "No, no, you don't believe me. You know, it's whatevs." So she ends up walking around. After a while, and she ends up coming across. Tiffany, who's a young mute girl. She looks like she's about 16 or 17 years old, and she's mute, but all she does is she solves puzzles. She is like anything you put in front of her, she will do it. She has no, she doesn't show any kind of emotion. She doesn't have anything. She's just like a blank, like, you know, she's a mute. She doesn't talk. She doesn't give any expressions, and they give her stuff, and she can solve puzzles. Like, she is just, like, fantastically smart.
She's a savant.
Yeah, but you end up finding out there's, like, some tragedy that end up happening later on. So they come across her, they don't really say much, and, you know, that's it. Well, anyways, as it goes back to Dr. Chouinard, and earlier in the movie, they ended up showing that the detectives were, or the homicide crew ended up investigating the house that Kirstie was at. They end up finding out that Julia, the stepmom who died by the Cenobites, ended up dying on this mattress with a bunch of chains, and they were saying that this is evidence. I'm not quite. I don't quite remember how she got. I don't remember how she got. How Dr. Chouinard ended up getting the mattress, but he wanted it.
Exactly. I was like, what?
Because remember, a homicide detective was led by Bronson. They went to the house, and that's where the mattress was.
Okay, but, right. But how did he get to the doctor's place? That's what we're saying.
And, I mean,
I guess he probably found out about it.
Yeah,
and him off.
Yeah, yeah. We could only assume, but yeah, that's what we're saying is that yeah, because I know like they go and they do all that shit, but it was like what the fuck, you know?
Yeah, and that's I don't understand that either. It just magically appears, but you can only assume that. Well, anyways, as far as that mattress ends up, it ends up at his house, and it shows him, you know, he has, like, this idea, the whole thing that he already heard this whole story already before about Kirstie and everything that was going on. Well, yeah. as you're walking inside his house, you end up finding out, like, oh, shit, mm-hmm. This guy is actually into the occult. He's into this whole thing. Yeah. You know why? Because you look on his desk, he's got three of those boxes. Not only three of those boxes, he's got pictures, he's got all kinds of stuff that has to do with this box. Now, just to keep in mind, this box is nothing more than a gateway to hell. So the whole point of it, it's just, you know, it's supposed to open up your desires. If you have a desire for something, that's part of this ritual. It was created no more than to open the door so it can drag your butt into hell to more unearthly pleasures. That's the way they kind of like put it. Like, it's supposed to give you like emotions and feelings and sensations that are beyond human feeling. And the only way you can actually get that is by actually like experiencing it in hell. So this is like something way beyond that any human can comprehend. And so that's what these little thing, that's what these little, it, in part one, there was only one box. There was only one, but as it led off to part two, now all of a sudden you see four of them. There's four boxes. There's three in it. And then he actually has another, he has the original one from part one. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, as it goes on, so he has the mattress. And then he realizes, like, oh, you know, if this whole thing is real, you know, and what she's saying is true, it has to do, maybe it has to something to do with this mattress too. You know, someone died on it that had, that was part of this whole situation. Maybe I can do something with it. So maybe it just takes a little bit of blood. Well, him being a doctor, he has access to patients, not just any patients, but the ones that are more mentally ill. So, of course, he grabs one of those patients, brings them to his house, and sits them down right on top of that mattress that's stained with blood. So he goes ahead and hands them a razor. And, of course, you know, any mentally ill person, they don't know what to do with a razor other than to hurt themselves. So this guy is seeing maggots and stuff all over his body, and he's trying to cut them off. In reality, he's just cutting himself up, and he's bleeding all over this mattress. Well, that was the exact amount of blood that they needed to activate this ritual, this thing that comes out of the mattress and pulls them and starts attacking the guy. Well, guess who that is? That's Julia, the lady who ended up dying on top of the mattress.
This Julia, played by Deborah Joel.
Yes,
and she's way finer in this one than she was in the first one, I think.
Right? Doesn't she? She does actually. I don't know. She put on more makeup or something. She does.
She grew her hair. I think that's what it was. Or the
first one. Yeah, she had short hair in the first one.
Yeah, she just looks a little bit more attractive here in this one. So I was just like, okay, I'd be down.
Well, just to let you know, when she does come out, when she's, you know, sucking on the guy's blood and sucking him dry, you know, when she comes out, she doesn't have skin.
Yeah.
Her body is like barely rebuilding itself. So she's nothing.
She looks like Razor from the first one, yeah.
Yeah. She's all blood and muscle. It's pretty
crazy.
Gross. There's blood kind of flopping on. She's covered all over. So anyway, so she gets back onto the mattress after struggling with that guy. She gets on the mattress and she's trying to tell Dr. Chouinard, who's like in complete shock of everything he just saw. She's trying to tell him, like, hey, don't be afraid. It's kind of hard to say that, you know, when you're fucking looking at weird shit like that. So she's saying, don't be afraid, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of, I'm not going to hurt you, you know, it's all good, you know, if you can help me out. And he's like, all right, I'll go ahead and help you out. So he gets some bandages, he wraps her up, he gets her some clothes and makes her look half decent. Now she's like, hey, you know, I need some skin, I need a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, you're going to have to bring me some people. So sure enough, as this whole thing was happening during this whole event, that registered nurse, what's his name, Kyle?
Yeah.
Well, he was kind of curious about Dr. Chouinard, so he ended up going to his house. He witnessed this whole ordeal. He was watching it, and he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
The whole story that Kirsty lady said was real.
Yeah.
And I just witnessed what the doctor's doing, and he's doing some black magic, some crazy ritual shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. There's nothing else I can do except run back and tell Kirsty she was right.
Yeah.
So what does he do? So while Dr. Chouinard is, you know, helping out Julia, the stepmom, in the meantime, Kyle is on the way back. Guess what happens to Kirsty? She ends up getting a message. Not a phone message, not a text message, but a spiritual type of message.
Oh, yeah.
And it's another body full of muscle and blood and everything leaning against the wall, and written on the wall says, I'm in hell, please help me. And she's assuming that's her dad. She thinks it's her dad. And I kid you not, that's just a weird looking part. Visually, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
Chris,
so
you got anything to say on that?
No, that wasn't be my question too, because like she thinks it's her dad, but like, do we know that? Because I mean, I kind of was like, I thought it was Frank. You know,
it is Frank.
Yeah. Well, it ends up being Frank. But that's the thing. Like in that moment, you can tell she's assuming it's her dad, but it's like there's nothing that person is doing that's leading her to think that. It's just her own internal bias.
It is true, and you're right. Like you can't, that there is no skin, there's nothing defining the dad, because honestly every person without skin, we're all just like skin and bone. You can tell a female from a male, but honestly, we're all muscle and blood underneath, so you can't really tell.
He doesn't even say it's daddy or it's your dad or it's Larry. He doesn't say any of that. It's just I'm in hell.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where she got the idea. I guess she was so upset about her the whole dad being killed. I guess she assumed that he got dragged off to hell too, because everybody else seemed to, and they were trying to drag her off. So maybe she thought, you know, her dad was also dragged off to hell. That's the only assumption I have, honestly. She's in a panic. She doesn't know much other than a puzzle box that's controlling this whole ordeal and made a mess of it. So, I mean, there's a lot to assume. Honestly, I would assume all kinds of weird shit if I were to witness everything that she did. I'd be like, you know, am I even safe? Should I even go to sleep? Am I in hell right now? Honestly, all these thoughts would be flickering, like, in my head. Like, putting myself in her shoes, yeah, it's very upsetting.
I can't even fathom the fucking thoughts, you know, and then after all the crazy shit, this is like a day after or two after all that crazy shit.
Yeah, so. I think this is like right the next day, I think.
Yeah,
this whole thing happens like right the next day. So, as far as this goes, so now, so she witnesses this, and now she's all freaking out, and then guess who comes in? Kyle. Kyle ends up coming in and explaining, like, hey, you were right about this whole ordeal. And she's all, well, no shit, I was right, but how do you know?
Yeah.
Dr. Chouinard, I followed his ass home, and I was going to ask him some questions or do some shit, and then all of a sudden he's pulling, there's dead bodies or weird shit coming out, and, you know, I saw this guy struggling, and, yeah, he's got, oh, those little puzzle boxes? Man, he's got, like, several of them. What? That's it. That's what I got to do. What do you mean that's what you got to do? I got to go get my dad. I got to go help him out. He's in hell. What? That's crazy talk.
Yeah.
Now that's crazy talk, right? So now she's trying to explain. She's trying to explain, like, look, my dad's in hell. I need to save his ass. He's trying to convince her, no, that's fucking nuts.
So she wants to go back into hell to save him. Is that okay?
So that's the idea.
Yeah, because I was like, why are they going back to the house? Like, I mean, he's not there. Okay, now I understand.
So the idea is to go back to the house, get – her idea was to grab any one of the damn boxes.
Yeah.
And then go ahead and reopen the doors. They think they can just run in, grab him, and pull his ass out. And they think, like, oh, okay, you know. That should be it. You know, anybody would want to save their own family member, especially a parent, someone that they truly love. They'll be like, oh, shit, if they're they'll assuming that they're
yeah,
in hell.
Yeah, they'll do anything.
Yeah, they'll go above and beyond, a loved one or whatever. So, in this case, so he's all like, well, tell you what, just give me 1 second before you take off. Okay. He runs off real quick, grabs a damn jacket. He comes back, I'm ready. Yeah. She's all like,
should have brought okay, a gun, well, but that'll do, yeah.
Yeah, and she's all like, well, shit, I don't have any clothes. Oh, well, don't worry. I'll get you some. she's running around is she's running around in like some type of bathrobe or something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, so he ends up getting her like a jacket and some clothes and everything. And so they take off back to the house. She ends up they split off just like any other old classic horror movie. They always have to split off. So they split off. He goes upstairs to go and check the rest of the house for Dr. Chouinard or who knows what. And while she goes ahead and explores the bottom side of the house, she ends up running into that same room where the whole ordeal happened with Julia coming back to life. Well, Julia and Dr. Chouinard are nowhere to be seen. She ends up finding some information, and she ends up flipping through this book, and she sees this man in a war outfit, like a general's outfit, like a lieutenant or something. And she's all like, what the heck is this? So she's looking at it. She flips the page, and she sees an image of a person that has like scars, like kind of markings all over their face, pretty much that looks similar to Pinhead. It's the stupidest name, but he's the leader of the demons. And she's all like, she starts flipping back and forth, and she's starting to put two and two together. She's all, is this general, lieutenant guy, this leader of the demons? Is that him? The one that tried to take my ass to hell the first time in part one? No, that can't be him, but I'm going to take this picture anyways. Folds it up, puts it in her pocket. Well, in the meantime, Kyle is up there. He finds a whole room full of dead bodies. All these patients, they're all dead.
Yeah, let me...
ends up coming out?
Let me just say when he's in that attic or wherever that Bette's at, I was like, that is so fucking disturbing. I mean, like, the way they set up, like, the imagery, the way they have their, like, just... And I know this one wasn't, like, a really high-budget film. The way they were able to convey just, like, sorrow and just all that shit, like, when that one dude's got the worms and he's cutting his chest, I was like, man, that's pretty depressing, you know? And then this part, and I was just like, as simplistic as it is with bodies hanging, they make it look good. You know, skip like bad good, like in the bed. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you are not wrong on that. I mean, these bodies are disgusting. They are full of, they're like, they have like green on them. It's like slime or pus. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bodies look deflated. I mean, like, they're all thinned out. Like, they ain't got nothing underneath. Their skin is all toned blue and kind of, there's red, obviously, you know, because of blood and everything. I mean, these bodies are disgusting, man. They look like something like I sneezed out, like some kind of humongous like booger or something. These people look nasty looking. Yeah. They are gross.
Chris,
what's up? And also, yeah. I want to say, because I actually had read about it, but I don't want to interrupt, but Pinhead was Captain Richard Elliot of the British Army during World War II.
Elliot Spencer, am I right, or am I just thinking somebody else's name? I think it's Elliot Spencer.
Actually, you find out all that information in part three. They'll end up going into a flashback, and they actually give more information.
Oh, okay.
In this one, they don't say that. They just further in the movie, she ends that picture as a way of information.
Yeah, we don't know anything about him. Because
they wanted to drag her.
He was human, right? That's all we know in this one. Yeah, that's right.
That's all you know. If you notice, like, from part one, they introduced the demon. Part two, they showed that he used to be human. Then part three, you end up finding out his backstory, how he became into that. Then pretty much anything after part three, it's just more history on hell and the box itself. So just as an extra tidbit, for anybody that's already aware of how Hellraiser is, like, if they're already aware, like,
Hellraiser
the puzzle box is, Hellraiser E, you know, the puzzle box is not just one box, and it's not just four box. Apparently, there's 270 boxes, and they were all scattered around the world. But half, if not most, of those boxes were lost or destroyed. Most of them are actually kept. These have to do with the comics and some of the books that were written by Clive Barker. And as far as the comics, you know, Clive Barker did have, you know, they did use him as reference, or they asked him for more information so he can contribute to the comics. But there was 200.
Okay, but that goes. Can I just have something real fast? That goes back to what we had said, because when we did our review on Hellraiser 1 2 years ago, I had given some information that I had read about the Cenobites are, you know, demonic spirits of the order of this, blah, blah, blah. And I said, when do I ever know that from this movie? And then Joe pointed out, you don't know from this movie. It's in the series of books. So that's the thing. I wonder if when Stephen King said what he said about Clive Barker and Hellraiser, was he referring to the books and not the movie?
A lot of the books and the comics do relate to the movie, but as far as the movie's going backwards and saying, like, hey, this is a reference towards the movie, towards the books, I think this is like, I think this kind of goes along with anything else, because this is Clive Barker. I think this is Clive Barker's like first movie that he actually had any kind of control over as far as like directing. So I think he, like any other movie, like when you watch a, like if there's a book, and then they turn it into a movie, they have a lot of little tidbits and extra stuff that refer back to the book. So if you want more information, it gives you more reason to read about it. And I think this is, I think this is one of those things too, that he's just like, if you want to know more, you're going to have to go into the books to read about it. But they do relate to each other though. That it's not like the movies are just set one way and then that's it. No, the books, like Star Wars, you know, a lot of the books actually relate to the darn, to mm-hmm. the darn movies. But this is actually the same thing. Now that you're right, there is a lot that, you know, we do want to question, and we do have, and we can get a lot of those answers by reading the books, but not a lot of us have that time. So some, they do make like little fact web pages about these things, and you can kind of go ahead and find interviews, and you can find this stuff also as far as YouTube, you can find this information, documentaries on this in case, but you know, that's the whole reason for this podcast, so you don't have to read about it, and we'll just tell you and give you all the answers you need to know. And that's where we end off on that. So as far as this goes, like I said, there's 270 boxes. Apparently each box has its own, it has its own ordeal. Apparently the box they've been messing with the whole time is nothing more than a door opener. Now there's other boxes. Now certain boxes, depending on, I hate to go far into it, but just to kind of give more tidbits about it, but the each box has its own, depending on what your desire is, they these boxes are designed to either make you commit suicide, they're to make you feel depression. There's each one of these boxes has a specific purpose and will make you die or get your ass carried off to hell for those, because each one of those boxes all relate to hell in some way or another. And that's the whole purpose of them, is there for them to be distributed and to collect more souls for hell. Now, throughout this whole movie, understanding what, just watching the movie, I honestly thought of this as a dimension, mm-hmm. not hell.
That's what, because I thought too. Or God.
Now, the reason why I say this is because after Julia gets the jump on Kyle, after he finds out about the dead bodies, they end up killing him. So now it comes down to
his death was kind of like, I mean, fucked up, because it's like, I mean, we didn't get to see the other ones really, but he's just like, he's just selling like a motherfucker, and she just has her like hands like in his fucking neck or head, and it's just like, you know, and she's just staring at him like slowly, like in this utter agony. I was like, this is fucked up. that's all I could think. That's what I was saying to myself. You know, I was like, I just wanted to punch Julia in her fucking face, dude. But yeah, it should piss me off, because you know, he just seemed kind of like a guy that didn't deserve. You know, I don't think anyone really deserves to die. But if he seemed like a cool, chill dude, you know. And then Julia's a fucking bitch. So yeah, and it was a fucked up. It was just perfect, you know. Perfect. You build up the heel, like Chris likes to say, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he was a cool guy for.
He wasn't
in the movie that long.
Yeah, it's like I didn't like really care for him, because it's just like, well, you know, like I said, we had the other guy from the first movie just real quick, and then they added him, and he's only in here for a little bit. But you're like, hey, you know, you expect Kirstie to, you know, have her, you know, well, I guess that she's gonna have Tiffany. That's why they got rid of him. So it was kind of like just to set us up and get us a death. But I was like, well, fuck, this poor dude. He's over here trying to help her, and he just gets fucked over in the worst way. It's good.
well, here, look. Yeah, I know that she was really cool, but Kyle, I was like I said, he wasn't in the movie that long. He was just more of a replacement for the boyfriend for part one, because even the boyfriend wasn't even the part one that long either.
Yeah,
he just kind of showed up sporadically
at the end, right? He just showed up like towards the end when she's like escaping. Yeah. I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was already there, but he caught the
crickets and crap.
Yeah, from what I remember from him, like, I can't say every single thing, but from what I remember him being there, like, he was there for dinner, and then he was there, like, at the end, right? Like, that's what I remember him doing, you know, so.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like I said,
she's like smiling at him. Yeah, she's like smiling at him.
She went off on a date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she went off on a date, and then they were making out like near a Subway.
You're right.
And then before you know it, he comes over. Yeah, you're right, for dinner or something, and then he's there at the end.
Because she's with him at that pet shop, right? When that fucking – you had talked about it, whatever they call him, that homeless right. man puts his hands in the – whatever the fuck it is. But
the crickets, yeah.
The crickets, yeah. So yeah, I think he's with her there too, right? When they're on that date, like you're saying.
Yeah, because she's creeped out by the. There's a homeless man who's actually called the keeper, but they don't say that in the movie. He's the keeper of the box. He's the one who distributes the box for people that are looking for more of the occult things. People that are interested in that. He plays. He's a shapeshifter who can fit any type of role. So in this situation, she's working in a pet shop, mm-hmm. and she sees this homeless man come in, and he comes in, but he starts eating these crickets, you know, that yeah. are meant for like the snakes and lizards and stuff like that. He starts eating it, and so she's freaking out. She turns away for a second, and all of a sudden, like, he's gone. But then guess who pops up? Then the boyfriend pops up out of nowhere, you know, being useless, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, again, like, the boyfriend, the love interest, doesn't play much of a role. Same thing in part two. He's not the love – Kyle is not the love interest, but he starts playing that factor, though. He starts playing the caring, strong guy, like, no, like, he's looking out for her. But, again, he doesn't really have much of a he doesn't have much of a role other than busting her out of that psych ward only to so they can go ahead and go to Dr. Chouinard's house. Now, by this point, like we were saying, like, you know, he gets fucked over pretty bad. He ends up dying by Julia, and it's a gruesome death. I mean, in comparison to like a lot of the other stuff we've seen, this is pretty gruesome.
And did you notice his death led to her getting her back healed up?
Yes. Yes, I did. Because, again, Julia needs bodies. She needs bloods and organs and stuff like that. So she's sucking these people dry. And pretty much he was the last person to get sucked dry. That's however many bodies that were in there. I think there was like 3, 4, 5, 6. I think he was the sixth one. I think that was 6 bodies total. No, 7 if you count the other one. I think there were 7 of them.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, that's what. Yeah, healed up her back. Yeah, that's what. I was like, what's he talking about? Oh, that's what repairs her missing back piece. Yeah.
Yeah. So she becomes whole again. So by this point, Dr. Chouinard and Julia end up getting the jump on Christy, and they end up using another patient. And it's Tiffany. Now, Tiffany is not going to be sucked dry. What actually happens is that they use her as like a little scapegoat. They give her the puzzle box, being a badass with puzzles. They give her the puzzle box. They set her up in this room, and they're like, hey, we're going to end up on the double-sided of this mirror, and we're going to watch from afar and see what actually happens.
Yeah.
And Julia's like, look, I'm going to give you a second chance at this. Do you really want that little girl to open the gates of hell, and you really want me to show you around? This is all I've ever wanted. I mean, this is everything. His whole room, this is all he's ever interested in. He's a doctor. Being a doctor, you're always filled with curiosity. You want to know how the human body works and all this. But apparently this takes it a step further. Now you can know more into the supernatural unknown. So in this case, she goes along with it, and she says, all right, we'll go ahead and do this. So they go ahead and give the little girl, Tiffany, they give her the puzzle box. She solves it. Doors open everywhere. It's not just like one door in front of her. This is opening multiple doors. And guess who's walking on through? The Cenobites. And who's the leader of them? Doug Bradley, which is, mm-hmm. that's his actor's name, Pinhead, this is the leader of the demons. So all of a sudden, he's like, no. What do you mean, no? And they're like, we can't kill her. She didn't open the box. Hands just don't open the box. It's desire. Pretty much his part of the ritual for this box is that anybody can just go ahead and play with the box until they solve it. Fine. Anybody can do that. But what actually activates the box and for you to get drag your ass off to hell is that you have to have a desire. You'll see this later in movies. They end up doing this again where they end up putting a robot to solve the puzzle box. And
I always laugh at that shit from part four.
Yeah, and same thing. Yeah, from Hellraiser Bloodline. I think that's like part four. Well, yeah, that is part four. And so same thing with here. Again, this girl is emotionless. She doesn't have no desire. She doesn't show any kind of emotion. She's like dead in the water. So, anyways.
It's not. What is it? It's not hands, and it's desire.
Yeah, he says it so dramatically.
Hey, Chris, I don't know if you watched the Cinema Stops review of this. But he does, like, his voice of, like, doing Pinhead. You have to check it out, Gabe. You'll fucking laugh.
I didn't know there was Cinema Snobs reviews.
Yeah.
Now, because fucking, like, this fucking Pinhead guy, like, I don't know what voice he's trying to do or what character he's trying to be. Because, like I said in the previous one, I'll still say it today, he sounds like Dave Chappelle's Prince rendition.
What?
I know. I laughed when he was texting that, and he's all like, "Yeah, from Lake, what was it, Lake Minnetonka or something like that."
Why don't you purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka?
Yeah, there you go. And I have one of the seasons.
I'll be waiting outside by the limo with the revolution.
Yeah, he does have that deep voice, and I was like, you know what? I can see it. As silly as that sounds, just for all the viewers, though, just to make sure that they're aware, that his voice is pretty deep, menacing, and he is, like, he's pretty dark in himself. As stupid as, like, the name sounds, Pinhead, it just goes just because of the way he looks. He literally has pins in his head.
But can I just interject here? That's one of the disappointments I've had with this one and with the first one. All my life, I had seen when I'd go to video stores, when I turn on TV channels, they show like a little picture of it, or I had friends that had pictures of it, whatever. I always saw Pinhead, and I had never seen it in the movies, but I always would see the image, and I'm like, this, and I knew he was in a movie called Hellraiser. So I was thinking to myself, man, this dude must be fucking like every scary movie character to the third power. Like, fuck.
So at this point, the Cenobites decide they're not going to kill or drag off Tiffany, the little girl that the mute. They're not going to drag her off to hell because she does not have any desire whatsoever. She's just solving puzzles. So they said it's desire that's activating the box. Mm-hmm. So what happens, they end up... I'm sorry, I got distracted a little bit. So at this point...
Did Nancy walk in there?
And all the doors... Yeah, Nancy... Yeah, pretty much. This is very distracting. all the doors end up opening up. So Dr. Chouinard and Julia were watching from the other side, from that two-way mirror. Well, when Pinhead decides to look, you know, he looks at that mirror, or now that mirror had broken... they're gone. They're not there. There was a door that opened right behind them, and they took off. So here Julia is going ahead and showing Dr. Chouinard around the whole place, mm-hmm. and explaining, you know, this is that. She takes them to what looks like the viewing of the whole centerpiece for this whole labyrinth. Now, you would think, like, hey, they're in hell, you know, it's probably hot, they're probably burning their feet off, and no, in this case, hell is the way it looks is nothing more than it's a big labyrinth. It's a big maze. It's cold stone. It's everything is just dark and dreary, and it's just there is no fire. That there's little pieces like doorways and rooms, but those are all anybody who ends up going there, that's their own personal hell. Mm-hmm. So in this case, she ends up leading them. And he's looking through, like, some of the windows, and he's, like, all, like, oh, wow, like, what the hell? I'm seeing people have sex, and I'm seeing people doing all kinds of weird stuff, and there's chains, and, oh, this is, like, some dark, sadistic stuff. And she's all, like, so Julia's, like, oh, that ain't nothing. Let me go ahead and keep showing you. Let me show you some more. So they go ahead, and they make their way towards the centerpiece, where pretty much you can view the whole center of this whole big labyrinth. Who's sitting there right in the dab middle, floating in the sky, you know, shooting black lights out? It's the Leviathan. That's what they call that box, mm-hmm. the god of that box. They call it Leviathan, and this is that's pretty much the devil. It's not Lucifer. It's not, you know, some other kind of crazy, you know, demon thing or whatever. No, they call it the Leviathan, and it's this big misshapen box that's floating around, you know, it looks like a diamond, and it's mm-hmm. it's spinning around in circles, showing off like beams of light, but these lights are black, and if you get hit with the lights, which Dr. Chouinard does, ends up giving them like a flashback of like dark, like a dark menacing, like things. He gets like pleasure of like the time that he kissed Julia. So it's all like, here's the pleasure part. He's kissing Julia. Now here's the pain part when, you know, he's seen hooks in skin and dead bodies and stuff. But then it goes right back to like making out and grabbing ass. And then it goes back to like blood and guts and shit like that and maggots. So it's like flickering back and forth. And he's like, oh man, he's just like freaking out. He doesn't know he doesn't know what to make of it. So anyway, she's like, what? This is what you wanted. This is my God. This is who I served. They sent me back to Earth, you know, so I can go ahead and bring it souls. Well, I did my job. I brought you. What are you saying? Boom, she pushes them inside what pops up right on the edge of this that maze, because they're kind of like on a bridge. What ends up popping up right next to him is like a box. So he ends up getting pushed into that box. All of a sudden, these like tentacle things and needles and stuff like that start stabbing him, and he's like, oh, and he's like freaking out. He's like, what the hell? And there's like a big old worm thing that jumps into his mouth. It doesn't look as grotesque as like some of the stuff earlier, so don't worry about like, oh, I'm probably gonna have to like look away or something. No, that you can watch that. There is nothing. It's not that dramatic. So he's freaking out. He's getting stabbed, and all of a sudden the box goes back underneath this bridge. It goes back down into, you know, wherever. So Julia's like, haha, dust off her hands. She's all, well, I did my job. Time to go back.
Yeah.
So she goes back. Well, guess who's come through?
Kirsty and fucking Tiffany.
Oh man, I kid you not. That's
and she's not alone now.
Kirsty's all like, Julia, my bitch. How's my bitch doing today?
So at this point, they're running through the mazes. They're trying to. Tiffany was already wandering in there, so Tiffany ends up. Tiffany's already wandering in there, and Christy's already like running about. She's trying to figure out where her dad is. Can't find him. All of a sudden, she finds out Tiffany's there. She's like, "Oh shit, my girl! There you are. You know, I know you can't talk, but do you know the way out? Can you help me?" She's just like, doesn't really say much. Yeah. So all of a sudden,
she didn't say much.
So at this point, they Tiffany ends up grabbing Christy and starting saying, you know, well, she didn't say, she just starts like, okay, follow me, you know. She starts wandering, starts leading her toward out of the maze. Well, as they're on the way out, they see this door, and the door is similar to the door in part one from the original house. Now Christy's like, I'm sorry, wait for me. If you can't wait for me and I'm not back too soon, just go ahead and take off.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are you going to do? I mean, you can get that from the expression on Tiffany's face. Now she's starting to show expression.
Yeah.
Because now she's like, she's already seen some shit. So Christy's like, I have to go. My dad's probably in that room. He's probably in his own hell. I need to get him out. So she goes in there. She's seeing all these weird things, all these candles, and there's sexual women in there. And guess who pops out?
Uncle Frank.
That son of a bitch.
Razor Ramon.
So he's in there. Yeah, Razor Ramon's in there. And he's like, oh, Christy, I do. Come back. Come to daddy. Ha, ha, ha. You like that message I sent you? And she's like, what? That was you? My dad's not here, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So get this. So she's getting ready to get killed by Uncle Frank because Uncle Frank's a damn son of a bitch. He don't give a shit. He killed his own brother.
Yeah.
So guess who pops out? Julia. Yep, she comes in at the last minute. And you're like, oh, damn. So two assholes ready to kill the good girl, you know, Kirstie. Well, shit. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, Frank is like, oh, shit, that's my girl, you know. That's the one who brought me back. I knew she'd come back for me. Get over here and give daddy a kiss. Oh, okay. All she does is ends up fucking him up. She goes, Julia fucks him up. Now, Christy's like, oh, well, shit. Well, since you all are fighting amongst yourselves, I'm going to just kind of split out of here, you know. I'm out. So she goes ahead and runs. And she runs out. She's trying to go ahead and get off home. And then guess what happens? Dr. Chouinard, he comes back. How does he come back? Well, that little room he got thrown in, comes back from under the bridge. Huh?
That little room he got put in where his face got wired cut like on Saw 4?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the wires didn't really... it didn't cut all the way through. It's just wrapped around his face to where pretty much he bled from his face. So he comes out and he's like, oh man, you know, this is badass. He even says,
I hesitated.
Yeah.
I thought it was badass. Yeah. I thought it was badass when he's like, he's selling for Leviathan.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, there's a huge worm that comes out of nowhere and grapples the back of his head. It drills into the back of his head and all of a sudden lifts him up. And all of a sudden he's like yelling all in a weird way and he's like all freaking out.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like when that happened, did like, I guess before he was like kind of like Pinhead and all the Cenobites. But then like after that, he like kind of turns into, I don't know, he's being controlled by Leviathan now or something, I guess.
He was granted, the way I interpret that was like he was granted extra abilities because at a certain point, he ends up losing that. He ends up losing that power.
Yeah.
But he ends up losing that power, but we'll get to that. So at this point, fast forwarding, they end up out of, Kirstie and Tiffany end up making it back out of hell. They're like, oh shit, you know, we're cool, you know, we made it back, you know, the door is gone, all right, yeah. Well, they end up walking through that psych ward, and they're looking around, and they realize that all the patients there and that are mentally ill ended up playing around with these boxes. Well, all those mentally ill patients that messed with the boxes all have chains on them and everything. They're all dying. You know, they're all hooked and suffering. Well, then guess what happens? So you're probably wondering, like, oh, well, like, oh, shit, they got to get out of here. Well, Dr. Chouinard ends up showing up. And he's like, oh, shit, you know, the doctor is in. Oh, damn it. So yeah. He opens up his hands, and this is his power. Apparently, each little Cenobite has, like, their own ordeal. They have, like, their own thing. So, Dr. Chouinard has, like, these snake kind of worms that come out
they
of
look
his
like,
hands.
They look like little penises.
Yes. They do. They're just, like, really long, and each one that the tip opens up, mm-hmm. he can make whatever come out of them. Like little knives or a drill, he can make even and
flour
just,
and shit. Yeah,
he makes a flower come out of it. It's real. It was real crazy. So he ends up cutting up and he starts killing off all the patients. So then guess what happens? So Christy and Tiffany are like, "Well, shit, we got to get out of here. Let's run back towards this other way." So they run into the next room. All of a sudden, they're kind of in hell again. And that's who they run into is the demons.
That's always the cool, like, I love that part where they, like, and it happens, like, a few times in, like, the first, what happens, like, the first, second one, like, they kind of run, she just so happens to run into them, and you just see you hear the chains, and you see them, and then you just see the Cenobites walking, like, that always, it's, like, just, like, perfect cinematography. Perfect setup, perfect everything, and then there she's like, "Oh fuck!" Like if she thought she was in trouble before, now she's even in worse trouble, you know, or so we thought. But go ahead, dude.
Yeah, and at this point, so they end up running into the Cenobites, and Pinhead's like, "Okay, no more deals. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna cut your skin off. I'm gonna make your soul suffer so bad. It's gonna be legendary." Even in hell. And they're like, "Oh shit." Like, man, he means shit.
You just hear another Cenobite in the back, "Oh shit."
I think that was Chatterbox.
Yeah.
I think that was his ass saying that shit.
Oh snap, right, Chris?
And then you hear the what's his name, Butterball, the fat one? He's all like, Damn.
Yeah. Exactly. Fuck, nigga. Keys and lost my mind, got left behind, still found a ride. Well, here we go again, another day living in sin, and another night to lose my sight and do it all again. Don't tell me that I got a problem, just trying to help me. So right there, they're ready to
have it out, and then here Pinhead's like, nope, no more deals. You tricked us in the first one, you screwed us over, and in the back of Kirstie's mind, you know she's thinking, like, man, you fucked me over. You were trying to drag my ass off to hell. And Pinhead's like, no. That's it. You're going down. We're going to kill you once and for all. That's what we should have done in the first place. You activated the box. You know, she's like, no, I didn't. But I didn't activate no box. But let me tell you this. Look, I just want information. No deals. I just want to get information. Yeah. What? She's all, who is this? She whips out that picture that I mentioned earlier about being a general or a lieutenant. She whips out that picture and hands it to him. And he's like, who's this? Another person that escaped from hell? Are you serious? Is this what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
And she's all, no.
Like Frank?
You. And she's like, what? That's not me. And they're like, no, you all used to be human.
Chatterbox again, oh, shit.
He pops out with that shit again. He got all excited, and he's all like, "Wait, hold on, everyone, hold on,
I remember."
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah, because the chick.
The
chicks are like, "Enough," you know, and then she's ready to just start shanking a motherfucker, you know.
And then he's all like, "Yeah, I remember." So then he does so. At that point, then they're all like, oh, shit, well.
What do we do now? That they start just looking around.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, what do we do now? This is our career. This is what we've been doing. So then guess who pops
up? This is our career.
This is what they've been doing for a living, you know, this shit. They get paid for that shit. They've been dragging off souls, you know.
Yeah.
So at this point, Dr. Chouinard busts through the damn door, and he's like, hey. Is this the party? No shit. So then here's Pinhead. He's like, what? Do you know this guy? I didn't invite him. Shit. So Dr. Shannara busts in, and he comes out with all these tentacles, and he's all like, oh, good fight. So there he is.
Yeah,
so Pinhead's like, no, I'm not going to have none of this. Let's go ahead and just, you know, off this guy right now.
I loved all that when he walked in. He's like, Tiffany, come here. I'm your doctor or whatever. I want to help you. And you see the picture drop, like he said, and then all of a sudden you see all the Cenobites, like, walking together, like, towards him. And, like, I love that little – I remember seeing that as a kid, like I mentioned earlier, when I put on – when I rented that, I was like, holy shit. This is like some kind of Godzilla battle, right? You're like, oh, fuck. The Cenobites are going to go into action. And Gabe, what happens?
I shit you not.
I love when Gabe goes, I shit you not.
Well, shit. I got excited about this too when I rented this damn thing a long time ago. And I saw this. You're right. This was a fucking Godzilla battle for me. I got so excited about this damn fight. So these guys are like, okay, leave it to Pinhead. He's the leader. He's like, I'm going to start this shit off.
Yeah.
So he's using his great – see, Pinhead does not do backflips. He does not jump over cars. He does not – he doesn't do anything. He just – the most he'll do is like points. He carries like a knife on his hip, and he makes all the chains do all the shit for him. Mm-hmm. So what does he do? He – makes all the chains the same thing. He controls a shitload of chains. And they all hook onto Dr. Shannara.
You just hear him getting his ass over. Doing some opera. Doing some opera for everyone.
Exactly. That's exactly how he damn sounds. So he hooks them up, but then leave it to Dr. Shannara. So I got these newfound powers. He's like, I'm the badass.
I got penises with knives, kid. You know, and just...
Hey, yeah, do the voice vibrato you were doing just now.
I don't know if I can do it again. It's good, dude. Sustain.
You go get a bite. Come back. Still be
Yeah. No, it's like because it's he has like a very they all kind of have distinct voice, but it's like Tiffany, you know. And because I used to like I was like it was so different than all the other Cenobites because like. Well, none of them really talk, but Pinhead, right? Well, the chick does, but she's kind of doesn't do shit, you know, just here and there. But anyway, Shannara, he's such a animated motherfucker. I hate him, but, you know, I mean, he's good for the film.
he was like the best one out of all of them, actually.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was so inspired by him. They used to come out with, like, these big old 12-incher toys.
Yes.
Of the Cenobites.
That's the one I wanted. That's the one I wanted. Yeah.
Well, I looked it up. I just looked this shit up. And, you know, those things go on eBay for, like, $200, if not a little more. To 300. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you can find Dr. Shannara, a 12-inch toy. Opened out of the box, of course. You know it's cheaper, but... With the box, you know, it's going to – you're paying a good
– Don't start mentioning opened out of the box to Chris. He'll start talking about TVs, right, Chris?
Yeah, you can get one for $350 if out of the box, $340.
But, no, I remember going to – yeah, like you know, of course, I collect figures and all that shit, especially – like, I love all that shit. I remember going, like, about 10 years ago, probably a little bit more, but about that, and seeing, Dr. Shannara, that you're saying this, the 12-inch thing, and I ain't talking about the penis, but the 12-inch figure, and – I was like, oh, I have to get this. But, yeah, I was like, I don't remember what it was, but whatever it was, I was just like, you know. I was like, well, this whole Planet Fitness shit, I don't know if it's going to be able to pay for a Dr. Shannara. So, anyway. Yeah.
Well, I got you. So at this point, Dr. Shannara ends up taking out the three Cenobites like nothing. He just shoots those little snake penises and stabs them, and they're dead. They're gone. So, but... Here's the interesting part. Now we're starting to – now when each one of them die, they revert to their old human selves. So, like, pretty much Chatterbox, the one with the clicking of the teeth that you'll see from the part one to two, he's actually a young kid. He looks like he's, what, 14 or 15 years old. The lady Cenobite, she doesn't really have a name other than she's a girl, you know. she ends up getting killed, and she's like a young woman too. She's like, she looks like she's in her 20s. And then you have the fat guy, the fat butterball one, same thing with him too. You know, he was a young guy also. So you see that they all used to be human at one point. So here comes Dr. Chouinard. He starts shooting some lasers out of his hands. Yeah, lasers. Now it's starting to turn into a sci-fi type of deal. But blast him in the face to where it's reverting his pins, you know, and he's looking, you know, he's looking at, like, his normal self again. He looks like the general in the picture. So he looks back at Kirstie, and he's all like, you know, just giving her this look like, hey, girl, I think it's about time you go. And so Kirstie's like, oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. Come on, Tiffany, we got to get out of here. You know, we're out. We're done. So they end up splitting off, and so here comes Pinhead, you know, looking like a normal guy. He's all, well, shit, I still got my blade right here at my hip. Let me go ahead and pull that out and go ahead and shake him.
Yeah.
Nope. It don't work out that way, because he goes ahead and just uses one of those snake deals and cuts his throat, and he makes the most stupidest gagging voice I ever. He's like,
yeah, like Chris, when he's drank too much, he starts hiccuping and shit every fucking hangout. Yeah, the same thing, you dude.
Know, yeah, you know that sound like when someone makes when they're like, they see someone else gagging, when they see someone throw up and then they start gagging themselves. They're all, bleh, bleh. Okay, that's the exact same sound, I kid you not. He makes the exact same sound where he just wants to, like, it sounds like he wants to throw up, but his throat is cut. I get it. He's trying to gasp for air, but it just sounds silly. So at this point, he falls down. He's dead. You know, that's it. Cenobites, they weren't as badass as, you know, they appeared to be, you know, so they got taken out.
I gotta ask Chris before we close out that crazy quick whatever the fuck kind of ending, but Chris, so what did you think when you saw that the Cenobites all turn into like people? Because I know for me as a kid, I was all shocked when I saw that the chatterer was a kid. I was like, oh, that, I kept rewinding it. I was like, no way. I was just like, you know, and then I was also disappointed that they died without doing anything, too. But, you know, what were you thinking during that shit?
I was very disappointed. I was.
That's it. Okay.
No, do you know why? Well, no, do you want to elaborate?
Of course I want you to elaborate. That's why we ain't even do this thing.
Okay. Here's why I was disappointed. Because, okay, the Cenobites, to me, are supposed to be the villains. They're supposed to be the heels. They never, I mean, they did live up to that in part one to a decent extent. Here, they don't have any heat in this movie. Like, there's nothing they do in this movie where I'm just so mad at them for what they do. Like, fuck those assholes. I want to see them get theirs. Like, they don't piss me off to that degree in this movie. And then she turns them back to their human form, showing them sympathizing with them and say, you all used to be human, and they turn back their human form. It's like, come the fuck on, can you not at least wait till the third one?
I can't say I agree with you. I like
Pinhead didn't even live up to the like fucking Pinhead, the character, the visual is fucking fantastic. It looks great, he looks scary. Everything a scary movie horror character should be. And then he does jack shit.
Yeah, honestly,
Jack left town.
Yeah, he doesn't really do much in the next couple of films either. Pretty much everything the way he approaches everything from part one and two is pretty much how he is in every film. He's more of the dark, ominous person that sits in the corner that's supposed to make you like,
yeah,
feel weird.
He's not gonna do something that's gonna go, oh fuck, sit, you know, Pinhead's here. It's more visuals than actual action. So,
I know, and that's the he's pretty letdown. Much that's the fucking disappointment.
In a way, if you kind of look at it, he's, you know how you like all that crime syndicate and all that stuff. He's pretty much the mob boss. He's, you don't see the Godfather getting up and wanting to do shit. He makes all his henchmen do all that shit.
Yeah, I know, but that's the exact same. I agree with that. Like, I can tell from this movie that he's the guy. The other Cenobites, like, they answer, like, when he says jump, they say how high. When he tells them don't do something, they don't do it. When he tells them do something, they do it. I get that. But it's like the mob boss in these movies isn't the most frightening looking guy. He's kind of a normal looking guy. It's the henchmen. It's the enforcers who look fucking frightening and act fucking frightening. But here, he's the guy that looks the most fucking frightening, looks the most intimidating, looks the most crazy, and he does jack shit.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special treat for you. The celebration of a very special, very unique talent. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the new host of Fright Night, Regine.
At this point, Pinhead's down for the count. Kirstie and Tiffany are like already wandering back into the labyrinth. Earlier in this movie, Julia got sucked in by a vortex. Yeah, there was a vortex, and she was trying to go after Tiffany and Julia to kill them off, but it didn't work out that way and ripped off her skin. Yeah, they ripped off her skin because Tiffany was trying to save her, but because, remember, skin is more of a costume for these demon people. She ends up getting sucked into the vortex, ends up dying, but the skin gets left behind. Anyways, Tiffany has this bright idea. She's like, you know, I know how... So fast-forwarding back to where we are, Tiffany has this idea, being a puzzle master, if you want to say. She figures out she knows exactly what to do. So at this point, she's already talking and explains to Kirstie, hey, we need to go back inside. Why do we need to go back inside? Just close off the box. No, we need to go ahead and do some weird shit with the box. And the only way I can do that is that I need to get back to the center just to make sure it really works. If we get to the center of the maze, you know, I'll solve the puzzle, get it done. That's it. So they do that. They get there. And Dr. Chouinard ends up showing up. He starts trying to kill them. Pretty much, he's just about to kill him. Who shows up? Julia. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You just said that she got sucked into a vortex and the skin got left behind. Right. Anyways, Dr. Chouinard ends up turning around and he's like, oh, shit, it's my girlfriend. Oh, let's go ahead and make out again. You love me now. I'm a Cenobite. Well, Julia's like, yeah, fuck you. I don't think so. Ah, turns the tables on him, you know, after making out with them. And all of a sudden, Dr. Chouinard's head gets ripped off. You know, the whole worm thing kind of goes off. And that's pretty much the end of Dr. Chouinard. Tiffany goes back to trying to solve the puzzle, and she does it. So everything's starting to shake. Everything's starting to close off. Going back to Julia, guess what? That was not Julia. It was Kirstie pulling a double cross. She just put on Julia's
swerve,
skin.
Bro?
Thick. That was like, man, that was nasty.
Bro.
Dude, she got some hepatitis or something from that shit. Yeah, so, yeah, that was pretty, I don't know, that was pretty disgusting for me. I was like, I'm not going to put on some skanky girl's fucking skin. She's all whoring around and I got to put on her skin.
She's all whoring around.
Fuck that. Job with that, though, because, like, when she loses her skin, like, 15 minutes earlier or whatever the fuck, and they show the skin just sitting there off to the side as some, like, you know, shell, like the way
look like a used condom and shit.
And they'll, yeah, on, like, your fence post, just a cicada shell. Like it was that thing, or, like, a costume, that like, a fat suit someone puts on.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, they show that off to, okay, like, I'm not really thinking a lot of it, but I noticed it. Well, then she throws it off and sheds it off, and it's Kirstie. I'm like, ah, that was the Easter egg. That's why they showed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good twist in it, but yeah, that's fucking gross. I'm not gonna put that chick's skin on. I don't care, even if it does attempt to save my life, I'll die by putting that shit on. So, at this point, so everything's rumbling. It's the whole end of it's like the end of every movie, you know, last minute kind of struggle before the Death Star blows up kind of thing. They're making their way back. Everything's closing off. The doors close. Everything ends up closing off. They end off on a great farewell. They solve the box, and you just see them walking in the distance together. Tiffany, she's talking to Kirstie, and they're walking off towards the sunset off of that psych ward, not saying or doing anything about the rest of the puzzle boxes that, remember, all the other ones that were playing, all those mentally ill people were playing with. and you just kind of have to assume, like, you know, that's someone else's problem. Let them deal with it. We're done. We're gone. And that's how it ends for part two. And, well, I was like, shit. It was like, that kind of sucked. The ending kind of sucked. But, I mean, like I said, the whole point of Hellraiser that everyone's a fan of is the visuals. When they say, like, it's your favorite movie, I kid you not, I really run into people that rarely say, like, Chucky or something else. Their first go-to is usually Hellraiser. Why? Because it's just fucking gross just to look at. The people or the demons, they're all twisted in their own way. They're all looking weird. They do weird shit. You know, there's sex and nudity and shit like that, too, in there. A bunch of titties. You know, it's just hooks, and it's a whole S&M thing. You know, and that's what inspired, like, a lot of these characters. So, I mean, honestly, that this whole movie, it's not just this one, not just part one, not part three, but honestly, it's just more for the visuals. And you can see that. This is, like, an artist type of movie. I mean, there's story to it, not much of a story, but it's still, there's something there. It's just fucking gross. So honestly, I am one of those people. I love this movie. I'm going to go ahead and give it a grading already. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. This movie is definitely out of the whole franchise, out of all of them. This one, and I loved Inferno. I know you mentioned it a couple of times. I love those two movies. This one mostly because of the Dr. Chouinard and Cenobite fight. I have to give it a 7.8. Almost solid 8, but almost like down to the bottom. It's interesting to look at, but I mean, again, there's not much for the story, you know. It's again, this whole thing is visuals. That a lot of people, you know, horror fans alike, they will say they love the puzzle box, they love the demons, the way they look. I honestly don't really get a much of a compliments or a compliments, but, like, you know, people saying, like, things about the story, like saying how great it was, or did you understand, like, the way the story went? No, I don't get any of that. Anytime anyone mentions Hellraiser, they always mention, dude, Pinhead is sick looking because of all the pins in his head, or did you see all those hooks, how it hooked into the skin of someone's face and blah blah blah, and it ripped them apart. And yeah, that's all I really get. Like,
yeah,
I was,
yeah,
like, right, you know, but that's it. I mean, that's all I get.
not enough. And it's not like, oh, Freddy's story. Like, you can tell Freddy's story and get people kind of like, oh, like, just the Freddy story, not telling about the movie, just telling a story about Freddy. You know, with Hellraiser, it's like you said, all visuals. You tell people how they look. You can tell about Freddy looks, but the backstory about Freddy is like kind of gets him over. Right? I'm not going to get into the Freddy story, but you know what I'm trying to say. Right. I feel the same way. Is that Hellraiser, everyone, like, over, and we'll get to them eventually, but everyone always talks about Hellraiser films like if they're almost like Evil Dead films, and I don't, they have similarities, but I think the Evil Dead stuff, it's a lot more fun, a lot more shit going on, but they have the same craziness at points. But Evil Dead is like a whole roller coaster nonstop for the most part once you get started. Hellraiser, it's got the craziest little spots, especially in the first one when Frank comes alive and shit like that. And just the visuals that the film, like when it has that box, or like it's like that rectangle that's just turning and you're, you know, just that. It's not much going on, but it's like, oh my God, you're just thinking torture, torture, torture. So it's good with making you think shit's going to happen. Without a lot of shit happening, I think the most craziest thing is when Frank, but he's in Larry's body, has got the chains pulling his face apart, you know, towards the end. And that's like the craziest thing besides Frank being just a muscle, bloody mess, and Julia. But there's not much that happens to where you're like, oh, that was insane. It's just kind of like little spots. These are some of the films I would love for them to be remade, but remade like the way you see like an Avengers movie with all the budget and the craziness, but with practical effects with the budget. Because I think these films, if you really put them in a hell scenario with all the stuff that, you know, Clive Barker has in his books and shit, you know, and it'd be pretty insane. But with that being said, just like everything that you said, I thought this one was better than the first one, a lot better. But there's, I don't really like, oh, this is a badass film. You know, it was fun. I enjoyed it. It's something I would watch on Halloween just because it's so dark. But yeah, I'm going to have to give it like a 7 out of 10. I think a 7 out of 10, 7 shots out of 10 is pretty good. I was going to give it a 7.5, but it's not a film that I'm going to, you know, repeat watch or anything like that. But it is good for what it is. It's Hellraiser 2 Hellbound. Christopher J. Motherfucker. All right.
I'm going to give it a 6.5 out of 10, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me why.
Because number one, like, you know, it's a letdown that fucking Julia is the main fucking heel in this, man. She's like the one getting all the heat and everything. She's the fucking bitch that you just fucking can't help but hate. But, like, it's just a disappointment. Like, what was the point of this franchise, and what was the point of the Cenobites then? I don't get it. Like, they should be the fucking heels. They should be the fucking menacing presence that everyone's running from, scared of, having to figure out how to fight, etc. And they're not. They're a bunch of fucking letdowns, to be honest. Like, the Chatterer was the scariest one, and that was in part one.
Yeah, he's my favorite. And then they gave him eyes, and this one, it pissed me off.
Yeah, and the fucking, like, like the whole, like, I just don't get the underlying premise of it. And you never hear anything about the Order of Gash, just like you didn't in the first one. Now you don't hear about it in this one. Okay. And then the worst thing is, like, now you're humanizing the fucking Cenobites. We're supposed to have, like, even if we don't visually hate them, we're not supposed to relate to them on a human level. And they show all of them in their human form, and they take them all back to that. That makes the audience relate to these people. And
you want to make them unrelatable. I agree.
It makes them relatable, and you lose your animus against them. Should not be happening. And, okay, the hell imagery was great. That was great. Like the layers and the bricks and, you know, lit candles and all this shit and the carnival and earlier on in that. That's great. But, like, you don't see with hell. That was good, but you don't see where there's massive, you know, unhappiness among a lot of people or human suffering. It's like she's there with Uncle Frank in that lair, and he's got these beds of these, like, bloody rape victims, I guess. I don't know. But it's just like they could have done more on that. They could have done more to get the point across. You're in this unhappy place that you don't know you can get out of. It doesn't follow it doesn't follow Christian dynamic of hell. So the Christian dynamic of hell is, it's a place you go when you die. And you're going there because you're being punished or suffering for separating yourself from God through whatever reason. And, like, you have whatever problem you had on earth, you're going to suffer that 10 times worse for all eternity. And they don't do anything to get that across. And also there's a chasm where you can't go from earth to hell or from heaven to hell. There's a chasm established to prevent people from going to hell or to prevent people from earth from going to heaven. It's the same thing. It's like God will put you where you need to be or allow you to be where you need to be. So it's a different dynamic than the Christian dynamic. And I accept that, but, like, there's just in both these films, there's just not explanation things. We, the audience, are just left to interpret this.
Right. And as far as the whole Hellraiser thing is, just like how we understood, like, if you understand, like, how the Bible works, they usually say it's like fire and brimstone. And in this case, there is no fire. It's mostly just torture and pain. But the way I always kind of thought of it was, I always considered it like that it wasn't actually hell, even though they call it hell. Kind of like if you remember, kind of like Event Horizon, if y'all remember that movie. Pretty much it was a space exploration, and they ended up opening a portal that supposedly might be hell, but it wasn't technically hell, I guess. It's more of a dimension. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think this is like same thing with Hellraiser. I think this is like maybe a third dimension or above and beyond, you know, just a different interpretation of, like, what, you know, space and eternity and stuff like that is. There is no real heaven, angels and demons. I think they just call them call themselves and hell, that.
And the hell model here does just not for Dante's Inferno.
The what?
Divine Comedy, Dante's Inferno. It doesn't follow that.
No, it doesn't. That one has, like, what was it, 9 circles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one has, like, 9 circles, and they have, like, a pit for suicide, gluttony, and I have that book. That's a real interesting...
The 9 cancels of Nancy.
Fucking hard to read book.
Yeah, my brother has that one.
You know?
Yeah, you get a certain you get a certain Nancy and cancellation, and there's the 9 reasons of cancels, but... yeah, I kind of got it the same way. It's like dimensions rather than it. This is hell, you know. And
yeah,
and,
I don't think this is and Pinhead's pertaining to like actual God. I think this is more of a dimension that they just call themselves that. But you know what's interesting though, that I think you all might really want to know, is that Hellraiser is getting a remake or reboot, if you want to call it, and that should be coming. It's going to be coming out on Hulu. It's going to be directed by David Bruckner. He did a movie called The Night House. I actually haven't seen that one, but it's pretty interesting to know that, like I said, Hellraiser is getting a remake or reboot, so we'll get to see a more newer version, and maybe it'll actually have more story that'll, you know, please Chris a little bit more.
Yeah, he's pissed off after this one. Yeah, with the budget. You know, get a story and a budget, you know. Of course, you need the story, but, you know, if you're going to show hell, really get it over, dude. You know, really show – if you're going to have the Cenobites, have the Cenobites do something. I don't want to hear, you know, Pinhead cut a promo and that's it. Like, I want Pinhead to do something anyway. I don't want to rant on
but,
it on.
But this thing, Insidious movies, when they go the further, that emotionally disturbs me more than when they went to hell here. Like, the hell visual here, like, what it looks like is great.
They're just in a room. They're in my living room.
Yeah, but it's living room with chains. I always considered that. Yeah, see, like, Insidious, like, that, the further, I always consider that as, like, limbo. That seems more like, you know, more spiritual, like, heaven, hell, and then there's limbo where all those ghosts were that. That seemed more accurate to, for me to believe in the movie that, yes, that this is more of a spiritual type movie. Hellraiser doesn't seem like that. It seems like the mist, you know, like the mist where they were talking about how they opened up a portal and then all of a sudden there was like monsters and demons that came out. They weren't really monsters and demons. They were just like twisted freaking aliens and shit. But everybody called them like, oh, this was, you know, they start panicking and saying that this was apocalypse on Earth. This is hell. Like, no, I think that's just like a damn alien that we've just never seen before, and it's fucking us all up, you know. And I think Hellraiser falls within that category.